Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to a special Selection Sunday edition of Gym Class All-Stars. Your All-Stars are here to give you the rundown of all things sports from the past week and what to look forward to as the bracket is going to get revealed in just a few hours for college basketball. Before we get into it, just a reminder that we are brought to you by the Viget Sports Betting app, where great fans cover. Download the Viget app today. We're going to save college basketball towards the end of the show because that's pretty much the biggest segment we have, as again, today is Selection Sunday. The last game of the regular season outside of any makeup games is about to start or has just started. It would be Ohio State versus Illinois. Again, we'll get to that in just a moment. We're going to start, however, in the NBA. We're going to start with one of the all-time great scorers. That is Carmelo Anthony, just passed Hakeem the Dream Olajuwon for 11th on the all-time NBA scoring list. Man, just 2 or 3 years ago, people were talking about how they thought Melo was done. He was washed up. He had no play in the league. And lo and behold, he's on the heels of being a top 10 scorer in NBA history. How much of an extra chip on his shoulder is that for Carmelo to just continue to prove the haters wrong?
It's definitely been had a lasting impact on him. You can clearly see that he has redesigned his game, plays a lot less iso ball than he used to. It's interesting, though, because when we look back, you know, when he's on the Thunder and on the Rockets, he really did have that aspiration to be a starter and be, I would say, the third person in a championship contender team, whether it was OKC and even Houston. The problem was, Melo, unfortunately, got a bit older. The NBA changed, and as we all know, that sort of leads to issues. And I think Melo coming to the realization that, hey, maybe I don't have to be the third guy and I can just be impactful, like on the Blazers, for example, that's kind of what he needed to do. And I think his career has been flourishing and prospering because of it.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think, you know, it's tough for a player who was at the high quality that he was an NBA star, borderline superstar. And then you kind of have to sit back and start accepting smaller roles because your body can't do it as much. Maybe you're not hitting as consistently. Someone like Dwight Howard, we saw a very similar situation. He had to accept that his role was going to start to get minimized at this portion of his career. Melo has taken charge. He's scoring a fantastic clip off the bench. He had well over 20 points in that game last night. We love to see it. Portland currently, I believe, sixth in the West right now, and Melo as the sixth man, an absolutely huge part of that. So a huge shout out to him. Passing Hakeem on any list is a feat worthy of note. Moving on, happy to see players come back. This one was kind of scary, so we're really happy to see him back. Caris LeVert. So if you remember the big Brooklyn trade for James Harden, the four-team deal, it had Caris LeVert being sent from Brooklyn to Indiana. And in the NBA and most sports, if you're traded, you have to complete a physical. And they found a small cancerous mass on the kidney of Caris LeVert. He has been out up until yesterday when he returned against Phoenix. It was an awesome sight to see Caris LeVert completely healthy. But what impact is he really going to have on this Pacers team?
I think he'd be super impactful. When you have a big three of Malcolm Brogdon, Sabonis, and Caris LeVert, like, it'll take some time to get used to. But I always had an issue with Oladipo mixed with Brogdon just because they kind of – they do a lot of the same things, but to me, Caris LeVert is sort of that small forward that, you know, they've been missing since they lost Bogdanovich, and Doug McDermott isn't necessarily the answer for Indiana. So I think Caris LeVert is going to fit in nicely there. It may take a year or two, but they keep that roster together. That's a pretty decent team.
Yeah, and I mean, even right now, like, it's going to take, of course, a few games for him to get his legs under him again, but they've been struggling. So getting a guy like that back is enormous for them. TJ Warren, again, no real timetable on his return. So, yeah, LeVert's going to be playing two. He's going to be playing some three. In the modern NBA, who knows? We might even see him start at center one game. We have no clue. But, again, just happy to see him back playing. He played over 20 minutes, which is awesome. Unfortunately, however, in the NBA, when injuries go one way, some also go the other way. That was the case for the Philadelphia 76ers superstar center, Joel Embiid. If anybody watching the game against the Wizards, I think the entire collective heart of the Philadelphia skipped a beat as Joel Embiid came down on his knee. The fear was structural damage and ACL tear potentially. Thankfully, that is not the case. It was a bone bruise. He will be out 2 to 3 weeks, however. You're getting Simmons back today, which is big. Let's start smaller here. How large of an impact is this going to have on the Sixers, just based in the sense of being comfortable and ready to go with their lineups come playoff time?
They'll be fine. I think it's honestly good because it gives Simmons time to develop and understand his impact for the team. Tobias Harris and them, I have utter confidence they'll be able to hold down the ship. Obviously, Embiid is a very impactful player, but this gives Doc the chance to maybe develop Tony Bradley a little bit, for example, or just try out new lineups. Like, they're playing the Spurs tonight. Not that the Spurs aren't a scary team because Greg Popovich still exists, but I think they'll be okay, barring anything iffy or stupid on their end.
Yep. I mean, the big question is, like, is this when you're going to finally fall behind the Nets and the standings? And honestly, who knows? Because you've held that half-game lead all year at this point. And also, who knows when Durant's coming back? There's no real timetable on him for Brooklyn. But going back to Embiid for a second here, the real big question that's going to arise is this injury, his 2 to 3 week span of not playing any games, is this going to potentially cost him the MVP award?
It's going to depend. I think LeBron would be the other front runner. Maybe Jokic is kind of what I've heard. Maybe Doncic you throw in there as well. I don't see it having a massive impact unless one of these guys goes on an utter run, like a James Harden where he's dropping like 40 points over the span of a bunch of games, or having those like clutch moments that sort of you need in an MVP type conversation. Joel Embiid, I think, is the clear front runner, but with a lot of things in sports, it really does come down to what is the most impactful thing going on right now. And that always tends to sway people, and that's sort of where people's minds go. So my hope is no one has those like utter superstar glory moments and we'll be okay. But I still think you'd have to, even when he comes back, if he's still behind, if he performs up to the caliber he's been performing at now, should be a shoo-in, in my opinion.
That's fair. I think the biggest thing about this is now all of the pressure for this award is being put on LeBron James at this point. Like, they're struggling with the Lakers, and Davis is still out for a couple more weeks. But if LeBron James can go on a stretch without his second best player and dominate, get the Lakers back to that 2 seed potentially, I think that's where LeBron James passes Embiid, and the only way he passes back is maybe not even the same amount, but even more dominance from Embiid, because if we're seeing LeBron take another step, we need to see Embiid take another step, just kind of how it works. But we also know the league loves not giving LeBron James MVPs. I don't really think there's a real third candidate. I think there's a lot of names you could throw in. I think Jokic, of course, Lillard, Curry. If the Heat continue their success, you might even throw Jimmy's name in there. But at the end of the day, it's really just a two-man race. And the thing is, 2 to 3 weeks is a lot of time, especially in the second half of the year. That's my only fear for Embiid. I think he should be the MVP, but again, at the end of the day, the best player in basketball is still LeBron James.
Yeah, but he's not performing well without his extra superstar. So I think it'll be okay. I really do think it will come down to, once he returns, as long as he's playing up to the same caliber, I think he's a shoo-in to win. Or at least he should be.
All right. That's what we got here for the Sixers. Ben Simmons, this could be a really good time for him to maybe try and solidify his first All-NBA second team. I'm assuming all defensive first teams already locked in the bag. So
should be.
We'll see what he can do in the absence of Embiid. We talked about a lot of those players last week that are kind of taking time off from the team until they can decide their future. Drummond, PJ Tucker, and LaMarcus Aldridge being one of those other names. We talked about last week about potentially where he might fit well. The real question here is, as we're getting closer and closer to potentially seeing him change teams, does, for a team like Boston or Miami or Golden State, these guys that are kind of doing it but obviously need another piece to really contend, is LaMarcus Aldridge enough of a piece to get them where they want to go by making the trade they would be required to get Aldridge?
Yeah, short answer is no. Like, LaMarcus Aldridge can still be impactful, but I don't think he would put up starting caliber numbers. He would probably be someone you'd want off the bench as kind of a nice piece to have. What I will guarantee you is Boston is in dire need of front court players, as they always have. Like, they have Brown and Tatum, but then when it comes to their forwards and centers, other than that, not much else. I will guarantee you Boston will be in great contact about LaMarcus Aldridge, or will be heavily interested in it. and then will fail to make a trade deadline move because for some reason they refuse to give up all of their plethora of assets. Even like they're so stingy there, it just pisses me off. It's like, we won't give up a second round pick. Like that's too much for us. It's like, we'll trade you a bag of saltine crackers and maybe like a hot dog from the snack stand from LaMarcus Aldridge. And they're like, no, like go away. And they're like, why don't we win championships? Jesus.
They hold on to 2008 for dear life. I don't know who it necessarily is. I still feel like there's a place for LaMarcus Aldridge in the league. And I still feel like if the right team were to acquire him, the right system, he could be a piece that sets a team over the top. But it's like, you know, the two front runners at this point seem to be Boston and Miami. For just as a Heat fan, Miami's perspective, he's a little slow and he's not good at defense. Like, it's nice if he can shoot a good clip from three, but that's pretty much what it's contingent on. And then Boston, again, he's not a great rebounder at this point in his career. So it's like you're taking him off the court or putting him on the court for either Tristan Thompson or Daniel Tice, which he's better than them both. That's not a question, but you're losing rebounding. And at the end of the day, if you have Tatum shooting shots, you got Kemba shooting shots, you got Brown taking more and more every game, you're just not going to find Aldridge enough. And like you said, maybe he has to come off the bench. But at that point, it's like, how much are you really willing to give up for 3 months of a player coming off your bench?
I mean, for someone like Boston, they should at least try something else. They have the assets. They have the capital. Like, oh, darn, you gamble with 2 second-round picks and you miss. Cool, yeah. Whatever. You have, like, 30 more left. It's like if the Thunder were like, we'll just give you a first-round pick. If they're so stingy about it, why do they have 28 of them?
Because they want a whole draft class. We've been over this.
Yeah, I know. But look, this is an entire rant about, like, GMs and just everything. You have the assets. Sometimes you need to make a move to go for it. Clearly what is going on in Boston, and this is not indicative of me hating Boston, like, something's not working there. You'll need to make moves eventually. You can't just sit in this idea of, like, above mediocrity for a number of years. Finance-wise, it'll work, but it will not win you championships in the end.
Yeah, I agree. Well, you know, the East, especially with this Embiid injury, people seem to think is still wide open. But at the end of the day, like, just adding someone like that to Boston, I don't even know if it makes them definitively better than, like, the Bucks, let alone the Sixers or the Nets. And that's the real question there is, like, is that move going to, like, I get it. And it's probably worth a shot, but also, like, it's, you don't give up too much for him. Like, two second round picks, I think you definitely pull the trigger. But if they're asking for anything around a first round pick, I don't think Boston should sniff that trade.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So that's what we got for the NBA so far. Not too terribly much. There were, for the first time actually in NBA history yesterday, 5 players recorded a triple double. Thought that was kind of cool. I'm blanking on one of the last ones. It was Giannis, it was Russell Westbrook, it was Domantas Sabonis, it was James Harden, and it was Julius Randle. That was the other one. All those guys recorded triple doubles. First time in NBA history, 5 guys did it on the same day. A little cool fact there to end the NBA segment. Quick little update for the MLB. Again, we're just kind of gearing up for the regular season. Nick Markakis, 15 seasons in the MLB. He's going to call it a career. Most notably played with the Orioles and the Braves. Kind of a fan favorite. A lot of people like Nick Markakis. I've never heard too much slander on him. You know, hats off to him. Good career. You know, we saw him torch Philly a couple times. Not super happy, but great player. Want to give him a little shout out. Trevor Cahill. We couldn't figure it out.
Cahill.
But, Cahill. Trevor Cahill signing a 1-year deal with the Pirates. He has been on the Athletics before. Not a huge signing. And also the Pirates, not really a team in contention, but it was really the only signing. So obviously wanted to keep you updated. The big news in MLB, though, the Texas Rangers are going to be allowing 100% occupancy in their stadium for opening day and beyond. Really just one question, like, is this a smart idea?
I mean, no, in the grand scheme of things, but at the same time, like, it's assumed risk, you know, that's up to the people going. I guess another thing too, that's positive, is if it is like an outdoor stadium, you still do have like proper, like, you have movement of air, so like in terms of getting infected, it's a little bit harder, but granted, you still have close contact with people, so 100% to me is a little bit iffy. But if they opened it up to like even 50%, quite frankly, would probably work. So I don't know. Also, the Rangers, though, they suck. So I don't even know if 100% of people will come anyway.
That's the bigger question.
That's the bigger question. So, like, they were smart. They're actually, the Rangers are the smartest organization in baseball, where they said, yeah, everyone can come back, but they know they're not going to fill occupancy. So therefore, they will be safe in the long run and they get the max amount of revenue. So they're absolute geniuses.
You can shoulder to shoulder watch baseball, but the baseball you have to watch is the Texas Rangers. They're smart. They're playing hardball with us.
I will never forget being up in Toronto. This is pre-COVID, like 2019. Mm-hmm. Blue Jays versus Rangers. And just seeing Odor walk up to bat and just seeing this stadium like on Monday night. Just this euphoria of booze. Like, everyone hates Texas Rangers for whatever reason. I think Nolan Ryan's really shining example.
It's because of that big fight they had. Do you not remember that?
No, I remember it. But, like, that's what I'm getting at. We're just everyone, even the Canadians, hate Texas Rangers.
Oh, man. Great, great stuff. Yeah, nobody, you know, you can 100% go roster Rangers, but Godspeed if you do.
I will say, though, that punch by Odor, just one of the best punches I've ever seen thrown in a professional sport. Oh, it's so good.
UFC career in him after baseball. All right. Move past the MLB here into professional football. Signings, cuts, trades. We got all of that as the offseason is going to really kicking in more next week, but we got the start here. We're in the Dallas Cowboys. They're leaving no room for question on who their starting quarterback for the future is going to be as they re-signed Dak Prescott 4 years. $160 million. He can go buy his mom a house, go buy the pool boy a house. Anybody he wants to get in a house now. He's got all the money in the world, and Dallas is committed to him. Do you think in the long run this is going to have been the right move for the Cowboys?
No, they're going to be in salary cap hell in like a year. But I think he deserved the money. I think this leads to a different discussion, though, about what do you actually do about quarterbacks? Like, do you genuinely want to pay them? Because, and we'll get into this in a second, on the flip side, you have a team like the Buccaneers who are giving Tom Brady 20-ish million. I don't know what the exact details are, but they're giving right around half of what Dak Prescott is making per year. And obviously, Brady has earned money over his career. Like, everyone is entitled to that payday. I'm not saying they're not. But to me, it seems like you either got to get a QB on a rookie deal and sort of strike gold there, or you have to keep kind of going through quarterbacks. I'm not saying they're expendable. They're very important. But you got to focus on the team rather than just the quarterback. And I think people are starting to get a little more wise to that. So Dak Prescott's deal, well, I think it's deserved, and it should be who the Cowboys want to build their franchise with. God, you have Ezekiel Elliott's deal. You have the Jalen Smith deal. I think Van Der Esch has a pretty solid deal. You have your lineman, like Amari Cooper. Yeah, you are going to just implode, I think. Like, at some point, you're going to have to cut people.
No, I'm with you. You mentioned Brady, which is awesome because it's going to go right into my point about this. People kind of wonder why you have these superstar quarterbacks getting paid millions and millions of dollars and they're constantly not making the Super Bowl. And then you look at somebody like Tom Brady, who, especially in the back half of his career, religiously been taking pay cuts to help his team, to make sure they're not in salary cap hell, to make sure they have that little bit of extra spending money for free agency, or to go acquire pieces via trade or nice pieces in the draft. And nobody seems to realize why that's the case. And it's just because Tom Brady wants to win at this point in his career. You know, he, unlike some of the younger guys, doesn't have to worry as much about his long-term financial future, so he's able to do this. But I think some of these young guys and some of these franchises need to take a page out of that playbook. And it's like, the back is unlikely in every scenario, the most important position on the field. But there has to be a limit to how important that is monetarily, because if Brady is just going to keep winning Super Bowls, getting paid half as much as Patrick Mahomes, why in the world are you paying Patrick Mahomes twice as much as the Super Bowl winning quarterback? I get how much talent there is, but at the end of the day, you shouldn't be ruining your franchise just to keep your superstar quarterback.
But you also ruin, like in the Chiefs case, if they got rid of Patrick Mahomes, effectively crippling your franchise.
Sure, but I would hope Patrick Mahomes can get to the, after winning a Super Bowl already in his career, can get to the point of, look, if I need to take $7 or $8 million less so we can go do that again, he has to be able to get to that point.
Well, I guess I know you're not egging on Patrick Mahomes, like, you don't hate him. Patrick Mahomes did take a restructure in his deal for obviously there's a ton of salary cap reasons. This is the first year that the salary cap is less than the prior year in a long time. So let's backtrack a bit. You have the older quarterbacks. You have Tom Brady. We'll say Drew Brees in this case, like a Peyton Manning. Back when they were getting these big contracts, like the beginning of their careers, they were getting like maybe $20 million a year. And that was okay because you could pay the rest of it. The scales were kind of fine and you could get that big money. The problem is everything about the quarterback position has been inflated with these monster deals, starting like you have the Russell Wilson deal, the Jared Goff deal, Aaron Rodgers, the Carson Wentz one especially, and then finally Mahomes. Like, it's so crippling if you pay them money. And Brady, I guess, and Brees too, and or even Roethlisberger, they sort of lucked out where they got their money at the beginning of their career when it wasn't such a detriment to their team. And Brady had his success, Brees had his success, and Roethlisberger had his success as well. But now everyone wants the money because, you know, big economics expert, Robbie, contracts go up, people want to get paid that amount of money for the future. And the problem is QB contracts are going up exponentially while the salary cap is not going up that much, and you're effectively crippling either your team or other positions if you take all that money. So, long-winded rant. Quarterbacks are more expendable than running. No.
Not quite.
But what I'm getting at is Brady had the luxury of sort of being, you know, at the time when QBs could get paid a lot of money, at least compared to their teammates. And now he has that money. So he's like, I don't care. I'll take a $20 million pay cut so I can pay other people. Mm-hmm. So damn, money doesn't matter. But to a lot of these younger guys like Mahomes or Lamar Jackson in like a year or two, the money does matter. Like, they're deserving of it. So it's this bad kind of timing issue, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, like, we sense that the older players are the ones taking the pay cut because they've got their money, and B, they've been at the top of the mountain and they kind of know what they have to do to get back there at this point. Someone like Brees, Brady, Big Ben, even Rodgers at a certain point might even do this. But, I totally lost my point there. But, like, you're seeing them take the pay cuts. The young guys, as much as you want the money, you have to be able to weigh the monetary aspects versus the team success. And honestly, if the money is more important to you, you should not feel bad about taking the money the franchise offers you. But the franchise then has to think, if we're giving them this money, what else can we do? Like, we see this deal. What else are the Cowboys? Are we going to hear the Cowboys' name for the rest of the offseason?
There's no way. Like, unless it's cut, like either cuts or salary cap relief. But I don't think they're really going to get much out of relief other than like someone like Jalen Smith. I don't think they're going to redo Ezekiel Elliott's his contract. Amari Cooper, maybe, but these are all iffy.
Yeah, exactly. They just, again, I think you're right. I think Dak earned the money, but man,
it's a lot.
It's gonna be tough for the Cowboys at this point. They might even still be the favorite to win that division, which is ridiculous. No need to harp on the NFC East today. We're okay with that. Second quarterbacks, though, we mentioned Brady a lot just now. Brady extending his contract for one more year, deciding to run it back. First year was so great in Tampa Bay, just to try another one. So another year for him. We'll see if it brings another Super Bowl. The bigger surprise, though, on the quarterback market. So we talked last week about Jimmy G maybe being traded, maybe back to the Patriots. That rumor seems to be out the door at this point, as the Patriots have brought back Cam Newton for another year and more of a surprising move. What do you think the decision to bring Newton back came to in the Patriots, you know, front office?
They couldn't get Jimmy G or couldn't get another quarterback. Look, Cam Newton's talented, but I don't foresee any success past maybe making a wild card push at a playoff spot. They went 7-9 last year and that was okay, but they're in this weird, like, rebuilding hell that they're not going to get out of unless they commit one way or another.
Yeah. I like Cam Newton, so I'm happy to see him as a starting quarterback still. I think the big thing for them is if they can bring in, like, even if it's a guy who's not gonna beat Cam out for the starting job, bring in a guy to give him some competition in the offseason. He can have to really work for the starting job. This should not just be kind of handed to him, you know, because he had his struggles last year. But if he goes out and he can kind of prove that he is the guy you want to have under center, then that's both going to give him and your fan base and your franchise a little more confidence going into the year after a tough kind of sluggish year for the Patriots in that first year without Brady. Okay, so the Houston Texans, we are going to be at all, like, as I stated, saying their name a lot this offseason with rumors, trades, whatever. Today, we aren't really going to necessarily mention Deshaun Watson unless it's what these moves could mean for Deshaun Watson. But a couple moves made by the Texans. First, they signed former Heisman running back Mark Ingram, who spent some time in Baltimore, New Orleans, became a free agent. Now he's with Houston. They traded, if I'm saying this right, Bernardrick McKinney to the Dolphins in exchange for Shaq Lawson. And then with the Patriots, they swapped some late draft picks. And they also received a right tackle, Marcus Cannon, who had been with the Patriots for a long time, and they finally let him go. These are some interesting moves because, you know, Ingram's an older guy, Cannon's an older guy, but Lawson's kind of a younger guy. Not super young, but younger. What is Houston trying to do? Are they trying to rebuild? Obviously, they don't want to trade Watson. What is going on, man?
I think it's a push at this, like, half – rebuilding, half getting younger, and half trying to maybe appease Deshaun Watson. But if your most noteworthy signing is signing Mark Ingram, then I wouldn't want to stay there either.
Yeah. I mean, I like Mark Ingram. He's a good downhill runner, but in terms of like shiftiness and elusiveness, he's not. He's really more of just like a power back. He's smaller, but he can kind of run through the tackles. Pairing him with David Johnson could be nice, especially because David Johnson's
gone, so.
Oh, that's right. Wow. They're in the doghouse. They lost him and Duke. Good Lord. Man, Houston's got a long way to come back. They can get so much for Deshaun Watson, and they just – it has to just be that they don't – they know they're not going to get a player as good as him, right?
I don't even know it's that. I think they really genuinely want to keep him. They know how much of an impact he'll have. But right now – everyone knows Deshaun Watson wants out of Houston. So while you can get a haul for him, I think it's not as high as if you were able to try and persuade him to get there. So I think that's kind of the issue. They drafted him. They want to keep him. It's just Texans are a dumpster fire, plain and simple.
Yeah, it's true. And especially in football, when it is so much harder for just one player to really dominate for success. We saw them on the other end try to do it with J.J. Watt as their only defensive player, and that doesn't really work. So again, we will continually closely monitor that situation for the quarterback in Houston. But for now, it's just about every other roster spot is going to be what they're looking into. A couple more things here for the NFL. Juju Smith-Schuster, wide receiver for the Pittsburgh Steelers. He is an unrestricted free agent. He is really not sure where he's going to be at this point. He wants to be in Pittsburgh, but he keeps alluding on social media that he is unsure if Pittsburgh is going to talk to him. They have not really had much communication during this offseason. And he basically, in the last Twitter post I saw, he said he's not sure where he's going to go, but it felt like it was a goodbye to Pittsburgh, just like the way he worded it, how much like appreciation for the city he was giving. And obviously it could just be, you know, he loves Pittsburgh and wants to stay there, but it seems like Pittsburgh's ready to move on. And as a Steelers fan, I hate that because he is by far, no close question, our best receiver. And receiver is a position we struggled with, especially in terms of catching the football. So first, do you think this is a smart decision for the Steelers to just let Juju go? And second, where do you think would be a good fit for him if not Pittsburgh?
It's definitely pretty smart. He's a detriment to your team.
Of course. Those TikTok dances are absurd.
They are, and that's why you went start 11-0 and then proceeded to lose, I think, every other game other than the Colts game.
Carmen's a bitch.
Yeah, but I think if you could get value out of him, go for it. That's how I always perceive things, but I don't think you can really do sign trades in the NFL, or at least it's a lot harder to do. So letting him walk is, like, okay, or at least there's added consequences to doing a sign trade. Where do I think he's going to end up? I've always heard the Jets as sort of an ideal place just because they're looking for receiver depth. But let me think a little bigger picture. Everyone wants to go to the Cardinals.
Can I throw a terrifying suggestion your way?
Bucks?
I was going to say the Packers.
I don't know how I feel about that. And not because, like, yeah, him and Devontae Adams would be kind of scary to each other, like, next to each other. but do they really need him? Like, I think Lazard is kind of making strides. Valdez scaling. Obviously,
no Juju, though.
Well, quite frankly, I think Aaron Rodgers will probably strangle Juju in the first 2 weeks if he goes there.
He doesn't do that stuff anymore. He's reformed.
He's not reformed. He's still an idiot. That's why you're getting rid of him. But
we have Dante Johnson can't catch footballs.
Yeah. I don't disagree though. Like, yeah, putting him on the Packers, putting him on the Bucks, putting him on the Chiefs, all scary options. I just don't think they have the cap room to really add someone like Juju. I think he'll get a decent contract from a team. I honestly see him getting a decent sized contract, taking it and just sort of going into obscurity or being like an Allen Robinson. That's not a knock on Allen Robinson. He just plays for the Bears and it's kind of like he's there. He's great, but he's just there.
That's completely valid because another team I was just thinking of is like the Oakland Raiders, just because I hear a lot of players Las Vegas Raiders.
Yeah.
They want to go play, like a lot of players want to go play there. I think it's partially just because of Vegas, like that system. But like, what if he goes there? They don't make any move for like Russell Wilson at quarterback or anything, and he just kind of exactly does an Allen Robinson, and like everybody knows he's really good, but he just kind of fades out of any real relevance outside of fantasy football.
I actually don't hate that because they have Aguilar, they have Waller, they have Jonathan Jacobs. Like, they have a lot of great pieces on offense. Their issue is they just need to bolster defense a bit. So yeah. I don't hate that. So getting rid of him, I mean, you have Claypool as well, so I don't think that's terrible. Like, Deontay Johnson, yeah, is definitely a problem and a liability. But Chase Claypool, I think, can be your wide receiver one if you give him a little bit of time to develop.
Yeah, no, Claypool is the guy we're going to – like, no matter what, I think he's going to be the number one long-term in Pittsburgh. He had an awesome rookie year, and they really like him there. I really like him, despite the fact that he went to Notre Dame. But yeah, if this is the time for Juju to part, I just want to say that I hope he does go into a situation where he's happy and can make an impact on the league, because despite what the rest of the league may think of him, I love Juju Smith-Schuster, the very fun, entertaining player and person to watch. I hope Pittsburgh keeps him, but we'll see. And as you noted before we started the show here, apparently the Chicago Bears are preparing some kind of massive offer to get Russell Wilson out of Seattle. What would they have to give up to make this even a possible scenario?
So yeah, according to my sources, it sounds like something like, do you remember the Ricky Williams trade?
Yeah.
Sounds like kind of something like that in terms of draft capital. Maybe not 5 first round picks, but a treasure trove, like at least 3. You add in, so you add a lot of conditional picks.
You got to give him Trubisky too.
Well, okay.
Just another for the sake of money, man.
Hold on. Just another one of the sources I have been reading,
sure,
and hearing from have informed me that, Mitchell, swapping quarterbacks and you swap a ton of picks because Trubisky's not worth Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
Apparently, the Seahawks do not want Mitchell Trubisky.
That tracks.
So despite the fact, yeah, they trade Mitchell Trubisky in a heartbeat, the Seahawks don't even want him. So
hold on the sign and trade.
Yeah, I think what you're looking at is you're going to have to – I don't think 3-team trades are really a thing in football, but it sounds like you're going to have to give them a ton of draft capital, maybe a player or two, and then the Seahawks are going to have to either use that capital to select a later quarterback, someone like a Mac Jones, for example, or – Mac Jones is probably the best example in this case. But you either use that or you go out and use some of the picks to get a player. You know, you have the USC connection in Pete Carroll and Sam Darnold. Maybe there's something there. Or I don't think Jimmy G is going to stay put, actually, after doing a bit more digging and researching. So you either go out and get a quarterback in the draft and hope he develops like a Russell Wilson, where you get someone in the 3rd round. They happen to be kind of a star. Obviously, that's a once in a blue moon type thing, but it is possible. Or you trade for an existing quarterback and someone who is better than Mitchell Trubisky or even Nick Foles in this case, as much as it pains me to say it, I don't think the Seahawks want to build around a 30-plus-year-old Nick Foles currently. But we'll see. I don't know.
But yeah, no, I mean, that's pretty much it. Like, obviously, the trade is going to be centered around picks. like, well, you know, maybe the Bears have to throw like you know, I don't think they'd give any of their top tier defensive pieces.
Khalil Mack.
No, like obviously not Mack. I was thinking maybe Eddie Jackson because like he's good, but he did have a down year last year. I don't know, some because like the Seahawks had that historically bad defense, and that was really the reason why people didn't expect much out of them in the playoffs. So maybe if you can try and pry something like that away, and in turn give up one of those extra picks you would have gotten, I think that'd really work out for the best. And obviously, I think Russell Wilson in Chicago changes a lot of things there. It'd be the first competent quarterback they've had since. God, man. I mean, the last Super Bowl quarterback they had was Rex Grossman, and I don't call him a competent quarterback. So
I actually don't think the Bears have ever had a competent quarterback. Like, they won one Super Bowl, and it was with Jim McMahon, and that was not the reason they won the Super Bowl.
Wow, Chicago, y'all need to pull this off.
You had a chance. You could have gotten either Deshaun Watson or Patrick Mahomes, and you chose Mitchell at number two.
Tritchell Nabisky. All right, well, no matter what they do, if that trade goes through, you can bet your booties that we will be reporting on it. We'll keep you posted as the NFL continues to get into the really exciting part of free agency in the next week or so. All right, so the biggest thing in sports this week, as we mentioned at the top of the show, is the fact that today is Selection Sunday. The pool of 68 teams for the bracket will be revealed, and the regular season comes to an end in just a few short hours here. We're going to start with the semifinals that occurred yesterday for the Big Ten tournament. The first game, Ohio State just beat out Michigan by a point to advance to the Big Ten championship, and Illinois beats Iowa by 11 to pass them and move on to the conference championship that is being played right now between Ohio State and Illinois. The biggest news of those two games, Michigan's starting small forward, power forward, Isaiah Livers, is going to be out indefinitely with a foot injury. The big reason for this is that he's the only senior in that starting lineup, and seniors, upperclassmen become so big during March. The guys that have been in the system and they know what to do and how to get things done. He's the heart and soul of that team, and that's going to be very difficult for them moving forward. But between Ohio State and Illinois, without looking at the scoreboard, who would you just like first glance say is going to be the Big Ten champion?
I'm going to say Ohio State just because they're unbelievably hot right now, but also if Illinois were to win, wouldn't surprise me either because they are also quite hot. I just think, you know, Ohio State beating Michigan, like that's a big win despite like the injuries and discourse Michigan's been having. So I'm going to give the benefit of the doubt to Ohio State. Let's check my good old phone.
See if you get that score up. Illinois, really hard fought game. Iowa had brought it to 5 at a point, but they pulled away in the end. And Io DeSumo was just too much for Iowa to handle. We didn't have a guy that could guard him.
All right, so score update. I'm an idiot. It is currently 34-21. Illinois is up. So not looking good in terms of my smarts today. What I will say though about your Iowa game, I don't know if you watched the end, where it was just garbage time. I forget who it was in your team, but they shot a 3-pointer as the buzzer sounded off and it got waved off. Fun fact, if that had hit and wasn't waved off, the over would have hit. But alas.
Yeah. I had a buddy at work tell me that he was so overjoyed that the shot didn't count because he took the
good man. But proud of him. Yeah, it's been interesting. I think like the Big Ten is probably the most competitive of the basketball tournaments thus far. So it's been good quality college basketball, which has been nice to see.
Yeah, we're getting big wins and big losses for teams that are going to factor into their seeding. Michigan could still be in contention for a number one overall seed, but we'll see at this point.
Hold the phone, folks. We have breaking news from my phone. Aaron Jones has signed with the team.
Oh.
He has re-signed with the Packers, though, so not much breaking news. 4 years, okay. $48 million, so he'll be with Green Bay again, not going to sign with a different team, so – sorry to detour that, but had to put it in.
Oh, good breaking news stop there. Aaron Jones, honestly, one of the first really solid running backs the Packers have had in a little while, so give him the money he deserves. Love that. Back to college basketball here. Georgetown, big surprise. So they got to advance to their conference championship because of the Kansas, I believe, got kicked out because of COVID. They're still going to be eligible for the tournament, apparently, but weren't eligible to finish the tournament. Georgetown, which at that point was 12-12, advanced to their conference championship, and they handled number 17 Creighton 73-48. Georgetown becomes the Big East champions and are going dancing starting today. Patrick Ewing's the coach. Do you think they're going to be able to make any noise in the tournament?
Well, first of all, is Kansas in the Big East? Are they in the Big 12?
Did I mean Virginia?
Virginia's in the ACC, so it's irrelevant too. I think they just – there could have been a team that they got in over, but whatever it was, like
– Yeah, I might have just mentioned the wrong team, but team that they got advanced to the next round because a team missed with COVID.
We love a forfeit. So
of course.
This is awesome. You know, happy for Georgetown. They have really done nothing since I think when they played Florida Gulf Coast and got upset, you know, probably has it been 10 years already. Do you think it's been a while?
Sure. It's getting close. Cause that was Otto Porter was their player and he got drafted that season. And Otto Porter's been a long time now. It's not quite 10 years. I don't think, but we're definitely past five.
It's got to be like 7 or 8 because that was the McCollum draft and all of that. Like Otto Porter went second or third? No, wait. Third.
I just want to give myself a little shout out here. Not only did I have Florida Gulf Coast beating Georgetown, I also had winning the next game that they ended up winning. I actually had a 15 seed in the Sweet 16, and I was so proud of myself.
Yeah, my brother will also brag about the fact you predict Lehigh would beat Duke and was the only one in our family to actually predict that because for some reason my brother's a psychopath when it comes to upsets like that.
I just remember hearing Lehigh essentially rioted afterwards. It was amazing.
Yeah, I would have loved to have been there when that happened. But moving on. So I'm happy for Patrick Ewing, happy for Georgetown. They, I wouldn't say return to prominence, but at least they're back in the news a little bit. Do I think they'll make any noise? No. And here's why. They're like barely 500, and that was with winning tournament games. They blew out Creighton. Like, good on them. But that's – I want to kind of attribute that to sort of a team of destiny thing. They were riding hot. They had that belief. And it's funny because today is the anniversary, like 30 plus year anniversary of when John Thompson got hired at Georgetown. So they managed to win the Big East on the anniversary, which is kind of nice.
I like that.
So everything kind of worked in their favor. I don't think they're going to make they may win a first round game, but I don't think they're going to make too much noise. They may even have a playing game, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah. No, that's definitely
like awesome. One of the 11 seeds kind of thing.
They very well could be in one of those scenarios because they are 100% the weakest major conference team to have an automatic bid.
Yes.
But still, good on them. I will say about Creighton, I've always thought their guy, Marcus Zagorowski, is a little bit overrated. He's really just a scorer, and if you're not hitting, he's kind of useless as a college scorer. So either way, though, a very quality win for Georgetown. Not trying to take that away from them in any way. Rick Pitino, so 1 year ago tomorrow, he will have been hired as Iona's head basketball coach. And the day before, 1 year, he has clinched his spot in the tournament in his first season with Iona. Rick Pitino, one of the better coaches in college basketball. You know, names get thrown around during scandals and such, but either way, he seems to be back in some amount of prominence that at least as much as a team like Iona can get you to. Not saying they're necessarily going to win or make any noise in the tournament, but like as the team that goes up against a Rick Pitino coached, you know, 12, 13 seed, you know, how do you prepare for that? You know, he's going to bring some element that you're not prepared for.
I actually really do think they could win their first round game. And I just have this inkling of like a 13 beating a 4 type deal. How you prepare for it? I think, and this goes for any March Madness game, you sort of just have to observe like footage as much as you can, like do scouting properly, figure out what they're going to do. Rick Pitino's greatest strength is being able to change it up on the fly and also develop new strategies before games. But this is going to sound like maybe the harshest and probably most asshole comment I'm ever going to make. There's a reason you're ranked a 4 seed. It could be funding, it could be whatever, but you definitely have the better players than a college that is basically a ripoff of Iowa, calling Iona. So you should go out there and play your own game. But granted, do not take any lower seed for granted.
Mm-hmm.
That is probably the most important thing about March Madness, where a lot of teams get complacent when it comes to playing 2 or like 15 seeds, 14 seeds, etc. And that's why they lose. Now, granted, those lower seeds also have chips on their shoulder. This always happens. Lehigh, Norfolk State, Mercer, the list goes on and on. Of course. So the big important thing is go out there, play your game. You can't will, well, you have the ability to will out a win just from pure talent at times, but also you need to go out there and play fundamentally good basketball. Don't just think you're going to go out there and crush their soul. Just go out there, play your game, and treat every opponent that they're going to beat you.
Yes, I completely agree. Never let yourself be the more unprepared one. Always be prepared for whatever scenario pops up, because lo and behold, Iona could come out of the gates firing, hit their first 10 shots, and you could be in the doghouse early. You never know.
That's the other thing. Sometimes teams catch fire, but the huge thing to do is be able to adjust on the fly. If you're playing man, they're killing you, go to zone and sort of figure out what to do from there. Like, obviously, there's a reason I'm not a coach. These little summaries I give aren't all encompassing. Sometimes the team is just going to literally hit fire and score and just beat you, and you can't do anything about that. When a team shoots 60%, you're doomed. Like, you're not going to win, to be quite frank with you.
Yeah.
So just go out there, play your game, play with intensity, play with compassion, and I think you can win.
Yeah, so my buddy even used to say super serious basketball. Well, that's what teams are going to have to do to prepare for Rick Pitino's Iona, as we're going to expect them to be somewhere in the range of probably 12 to 15, more than likely. Maybe 11, who knows?
Yeah.
Last really important one, the Big 12 championship occurred yesterday between number 13 Texas and number 12 Oklahoma State. Texas did sneak out the five-point victory. Cade Cunningham of Oklahoma State went for 28, but Matt Coleman of Texas went for 30, including 4 of 5 from deep. This is going to carry us right into our next segment, which is I'm going to call Who's Ready to Dance. And it's who we think are going to be teams prepared for a quality run in the tournament, and who are teams to maybe avoid, especially depending on where they get placed in the bracket. And the team I want to talk about first and foremost is Texas, because Texas came out, they beat a hot Oklahoma State team. Obviously Texas hot themselves, but they came out, they were the lower seed, and they still won. Their best player, Matt Coleman, was the reason they won, which is always big this time of year. And Texas is one of those teams that when they have just like a guy or two that can just kind of get you buckets, can do a lot of stuff for you, important stuff, that's huge, because they're a program that can, they always can play defense. They're unless there's one of those random years where they're just like not a good team at all, they're always a long athletic team, and in college basketball that's huge. And then when you have a guy like Coleman who can knock down shot after shot, that is a team that if they can get some positive matchups can really, really scorch you, especially in those first couple rounds in March Madness. So before I get to the rest of my list, and I have a lot of teams mentioned here, so what is maybe your top team as a sleeper to make a nice deep run here in the tournament?
Oh boy. It's hard because I have a few teams that I think are going to go far, but they're not sleepers by any means. Like, I think Gonzaga is going to do reasonably well to Elite Eight. Then after that, sort of, you know, kind of whatever happens, but they're not a sleeper. They're the number one school in the country.
They're going to be the number one overall seed.
Yes. Okay. I think I agree with Texas. I said this last week. I do think Texas is going to be a force to be reckoned with. Do you think they'll get like above a 6 seed? Like, I think they're going to be kind of in that 4 to 6 range, but I don't mean to be optimistic about that 4.
That's a really good question, especially because so Ohio State's ranked 9 right now. If they lose, I don't think they fall below Texas, but that's like they're in the same category. And I don't think Ohio State falls lower than a 4. So I'm going to say I don't think Texas is going to fall lower than a 5, but I won't be like overly surprised if they go in the 6. If they're like a 7 or 8, though, that'd be kind of crazy.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I think Texas, though, while they may have a tougher first round matchup than other teams, because they could fall, if they're a 6 or a 5, they could fall in that territory of, oh, we play like a, maybe not Georgetown, but some sort of school that's at large who is like actually decent. And that could be problematic. Texas, and then I said last week, Texas Tech is another one that I think is a sleeper. After watching today, LSU is another one.
Yep, that's a big one for me.
They are scary looking. Also Alabama, but Alabama is probably going to get a 2 seed. I think God, sorry.
I want to piggyback off of LSU for a second. I think it was the last tournament that happened, so 2 years ago, they were a three seed, and I took them relatively far. That was when they had Tremont Waters, and their starting point guard right now, whose name is Javonte Smart, and everybody needs to start remembering that because that dude can ball. Trent Watford can ball. They have some guys that can just really get it done, and they're not ranked as of right now, but they have had a very, very hot end of the season. They just lost a squeak out of a game against Alabama in that SEC championship game. But they are one of those teams, and I'm always high on the team that finishes the hot, like the most hot team at the end of the regular season. LSU, to go off of what you were saying with LSU, they're going to be a force to be reckoned with. They have this guy, Javonte Smart, who was on their team the last tournament run they had. They were a three seed. He was playing with Tremont Waters in the backcourt. He's now the full-time starting shooting guard, and he is a sensational two-way player. Trenton Watford, another sensational two-way player. Missed a tough shot at the end of this last game, but another guy who can play very physical, can play a lot of positions in the college game, and it's going to be very big for them come tournament time. They are absolutely going to be a team poised for a deep run. But more importantly, they're going to be one of those teams that if they get like a two or a three seed early on in the tournament, they're going to be hungry to take that team down. And they're going to be one of the very scary teams that are able to do it.
Yeah, LSU, I think, falls in that ideal. This is maybe a bit pessimistic, but that's 7-8 where you're just like, oh my God, I don't want to play them.
Yep. Like whenever Villanova is an eight seed.
Yeah, or Kentucky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. We've hit most of the teams that I wanted to mention. Again, not a sleeper. My pick this year is Illinois, no question. Like, unless they just have a shit path to the championship, at this point in time, they're the team that I'm planning on taking all the way. Io looks like a poor man's Ja Morant to me. And Kofi Cockburn is just this physically dominant presence. They have a bunch of other guys that can rebound, they can shoot the basketball. And just watching them play, even a team like Iowa, who has their flaws, but they're still a good basketball team. But they really found all of the holes in Iowa's defense. They were aggressive rebounding. They were aggressive attacking and shooting. They really came prepared for that game. And I think in come tournament time, they're going to get like, you know, it's tough on playing every other night, but they're one of those teams that just knows how to prepare for each individual team. And again, Io DeSunmu is not somebody you want to be going up against in March.
I think another sleeper team that you failed to mention is Drake. I think they're this year's Wichita State to a degree. Maybe not a number one seed, for example, but could they make some noise? I think maybe Sweet 16 type deal. There will obviously be, to everyone listening, there will obviously be some weird sleeper team that we have failed to mention because, you know what, quite frankly, we don't care about a whole lot of minor basketball schools, even though our co-host went to a Patriot League school. We don't really care about the Patriot League. Colgate, I don't think, is going to make noise, despite the fact that they are a toothpaste brand. Who knows? There will be some weird team. Like every year, it's Loyola Chicago or George Mason. There will be some team that goes in that Cinderella run that we're going to be over the moon ecstatic for. But we're not that smart. And also, no one knows. So we will find out. These are our best case scenarios, but Robbie, you wanted to do a very fun segment called Who's Going Dancing. This is going to probably give me PTSD from homecoming in high school when no girl danced with me, but we're going to go through it anyway. I'm going to try not to cry.
Good, good. We're here for you. We're your emotional support. Don't worry. Let your feelings out.
Of course.
One last team. You mentioned Drake is a smaller school team. So Houston is ranked 7th right now, but they're in a smaller conference. They're 23-3 though. They just won their conference. They've been good all year. They really haven't had many struggles or many injuries to have to deal with, which is huge. So again, another one of these teams that if they get the right matchup in the first or second round and they can get to the Sweet 16, it's like, oh, this team knows how to win basketball games. Like at the end of the day, if they can avoid too many just like physically dominating matchups on the other end of the court, like they're gonna win. And they might even, like, there was the one year that Michigan lost to Villanova in the championship. They beat Houston by like a point because they just had this dude that could just hit every shot. It was crazy. Like if they have guys that are just going to get hot like that, they're absolutely a team that can make a good run. Sweet 16, Elite 8 even.
Yeah, it's one thing to be said. I know college three-pointers are shorter than the NBA, but some of the shots the players take with just such confidence and the proper form and all that are incredible. I don't know if you remember, this is probably when we were like sophomores in high school, so it's been a few years. It was like Baylor versus, oh God, it was whatever Kevin Ware's transfer team was. I can't even remember. Like,
I know who. Oh, it's it was RJ Hunter's team.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm blanking on who it was, but I know exactly what
game. It's not like Weber State. It's something State, though, I'm pretty sure. But in that game, I remember they had the ball. They're kind of trying to score the final possession, and they give the ball to, I believe, the coach's son, who is at least a good 8 feet by the three-point line and just launches it, and it's a swish. And you're just, like, stunned about, like, what are you doing? But, hey, that's kind of the beauty of it. People are taking
these. That's March.
Yeah, that's March, and that's why we love
Georgia
it so much.
State.
Georgia State. All right. So, exactly. Irrelevant.
Exactly. Case. But, yeah, no, that's another perfect example of one of those random teams that we're not going to be able to remember that might just make a ridiculous run. That's a great example, actually. That was a fun team. So, on the flip side of this, though, some teams to maybe avoid, some teams that could prove disastrous if you take them too far in the tournament this year. I mentioned this team to start with last week. That's Villanova. I want to reiterate that they have lost their starting point guard, Colin Gillespie, who was their player of the year candidate. They have lost a forward. They are now down to Jeremiah Robinson Earl is not quite ready to take over the reins as the go-to scorer. Villanova scares me because they were really, really good. They lost their really only playmaker, and they've lost their last two games. It's a little worrisome. I'm usually pretty low on Villanova anyway. I know they have their years where they win or they go to the championship, but there's also years where they drop in the round of 32. I think this might be one of those years.
All right, here are my four that I'd be not very hot on. I would not be too hot on Duke or Kentucky. One, because I don't think they'll be in the tournament.
Yeah, I don't think
the only team that could make it in is Duke, but I do not think they will select Duke, which is a shame because go Blue Devils, whatever. The other two, and I sound like a broken record because I'm just naming all Big 12 teams, but I would not trust Baylor right now, and I know they're one of the best teams in the country, but they got cold fast.
Nope, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Baylor is always a team that gets cold in March, no matter how good they are, 2 seed, 3 seed, no matter, like, they'll be a 1 seed this year, but no matter what, they always get ice cold at the end of the season.
To the Baylor fans, see Georgia State example 2 minutes ago.
Literally.
Another team, and I know we talked so highly about them, but Oklahoma State, and not because I don't think they're good. I really see them being a win one round and then losing the next round type deal. I just, like, Cade Cunningham probably is going to be the first overall pick in the draft and is all deserving of any honors he gets. But to me, it reeks of Trae Young a few years ago with Oklahoma, where they're going to, well, they didn't even win. They lost their first round game, but I think they can win a game. And then after that, it's going to be contingent on who they play, but I don't see them advancing past the Sweet 16, quite frankly.
I see where you're coming from. I'll say this of Cade Cunningham. Again, in my opinion, he's the no question clear cut number one overall pick at this point in the draft. And this is huge because this is going to prove, like, how good can you potentially get? Because, like, if you're one of those Trae Young team, like, you know, this team is better than what Trae Young's team was. Trae Young's team barely limped into the tournament. Cade Cunningham is going to comfortably be a 5 or 6 seed, more than likely, maybe even 4 if they get a generous ranking. We expect him to win a game. Most people are going to even expect him to win 2 games. But if he can get this team on a run, get into the Elite Eight, the Final Four, God's sakes, the championship, like, that is going to somehow rise the draft stock of the already consensus number one overall draft pick. So then it's going to become not just this, there might even be a bidding war for that number one overall pick because he's going to be such this coveted piece. The way I've been kind of comparing him to people is that I think he's everything Lonzo Ball was hyped up to be. I think he's a two-way player who can shoot, he can play make, and he can absolutely defend 1 through 3, even 1 through 4 when they're playing small ball. But they're definitely a team to watch for because he's a freshman. He hasn't really been here before. There's a whole different level of basketball. You're absolutely right. He could just either get overwhelmed by another team, crack under pressure. We have no idea what's going to happen.
I will give you my best case scenario for that team. They pull off a Davidson type run, and they're obviously not going to be ranked like Davidson was when Curry was there, but I don't see them making it to the Final Four. Like, I think at best they will make it to Elite Eight and be competitive in the Elite Eight, but I really believe it's Sweet 16 and loss.
All right. So,
That's my thoughts about it. I just don't think there's any – the team's better than Trae Young's team, but I don't think it's really well assembled to handle some pressure come actual games.
No, I'm with you there. Another team I'm really cold on, Florida State, is just one of those teams like Baylor that I think they just kind of they just don't do well unless they have like four or five NBA – maybe not four or five, but like two or three NBA players on their team. They tend to just be a bunch of athletic guys that like – it's good on defense, but at the end of the day, if you're facing a talented enough offense, it's not going to really matter too much if the skill and the technical aspects of the game aren't there. And they haven't really blown me away anytime I got a chance to watch them this year. They haven't really shown me anything being too special of a Florida State team. But the big, big team that I really am reluctant to tell people to avoid is the Iowa Hawkeyes. I am almost 100% convinced that they are going to lose in the round of 32. My pieces, I have three things I want to get to. We're going to start with the first two, which are how their offense works. So I was watching this Illinois game, and you know, Illinois is a spectacular basketball team, but I was watching the offense, and they did one of two things every single possession. It was either Bohannon or Wieskamp just runs around the perimeter until they get an open enough three-pointer to take, or they spend the entire shot clock trying their absolute hardest to get the ball to Luka Garza on the low block. And it takes the entire shot clock. It is not good offense. It's not fluid offense. And there's very little ball movement.
I disagree. Like, that's how we played in rec basketball. And we were pretty dominant.
We were pretty dominant, but that's because we had people to get you the ball in the place you needed to score the basketball with. And I was faster than most people. Iowa doesn't have any speed demons out there. And Luka Garza isn't quite as athletic as you were, if I'm, but the other part comes on defense, which is the really scary thing, is that Iowa is essentially forced to play a 2-3 zone. And the reason for this is because Jordan Bohannon, the starting point guard who hits all these clutch shots in Iowa in the past few years, he cannot guard anybody. He is a like J.J. Redick, Trae Young type liability on defense. He cannot play on that side of the court. And the issue with that is he's not giving you J.J. Redick or Trae Young levels of offense on the other end on a nightly basis. He's an inconsistent shooter. He's a very good off-balance three-point shooter and a very good clutch shooter. But there's a whole side of the court he can't play. And outside of Luka Garza, you know, Iowa lost their backup center, Nunji, for the rest of the year, torn ACL. Luka Garza's essentially playing all of those minutes. He doesn't really come off the court because we don't really have another rebounder. We're playing four guards and a big man, like I've said all year. We're, you know, the coach's son is essentially, he was a point guard his entire life. He's the starting power forward all of a sudden. He's a bigger guy, but he's not a rebound presence. He's not necessarily a defensive stopper. Iowa is one of those teams that they are going to get like this just feisty, no-name college team in the second round that just has this one dude that doesn't miss and this one dude that can block shots, and they're going to have one guy just big enough to annoy Luka Garza, and we're going to slip up. We're not going to be shooting the way we can shoot, and it's going to be over just like that. And I hate having these thoughts, but I was watching that game, and all I could think of last night was all the flaws I could see in Iowa's game. If I'm wrong, I will gladly eat my words, and I will hand Luka Garza his free sandwich. But at the end of the day, I would be very weary picking Iowa to go any further than the Sweet 16 at the absolute furthest.
I think the Sweet 16 is kind of where they're going to tap out, because I want to say they're going to get a 2 seed, maybe three. But like I can 100% see them getting a 2. I think they'd win the first round matchup. You know, I know as much how panicked you are. You're not wrong though. The next one would be a 7 or 10. That's can be a tough matchup, but I think they could even win that. After that though, you got whoever, like a 3 or 4, maybe if things go proper, you're sort of at the mercy of what the bracket gives you. So if you get a bunch of upsets, yeah, maybe you could go far because you play like the 12 seed and you're like, oh, we can win that. But you're not wrong. If they play a legitimately good team who has a little more depth and a little bit more athletic prowess, then yeah, they could be in for a rude awakening, unfortunately. But we're going to still ride with Luka here.
He's still the player of the year, and he is he's the biggest factor, because if Luka Garza can establish himself and dominate, Iowa's going to find lots of success. The issue has been him finding ways to dominate, because teams can kind of double him on the low block. They can rough him up a little bit. You know, fouls are going to get called a little more leniently, hopefully, we would see. So we'll see if he can establish his presence inside. But he should not be going outside in approach, which is what he's been doing the last few games, trying to hit jump shots. Not his game. He can do it, but you got to be able to get the easy stuff. And if we can't do that, we're going to struggle. Any other teams you want to throw out before we move on here?
I think I'm good. I think we're going to have to see the bracket, and then we'll have some, when's the first round game start? Thursday?
I think Thursday. Yeah. It'll be like the play-in games, but
we're going to have to do an emergency one. We're going to have to do a night this week where we talk through the brackets.
That's 100% fine. I hope everybody is going to appreciate that. Cause yeah, we're going
to
go.
We're going to have to do it. We're going to have to do it.
I'm in for that. We'll make it work. All right. But that's what we got for March Madness. Again, we're getting closer and closer to the announcement. I think we're just over an hour away at this point. But before we get to the bracket and let you guys go, we do have some superlatives for this week of sports. And again, as always, we'll start here with the MVP. My MVP for this week, and this is somebody I don't like to give too much credit to, but that is Giannis Antetokounmpo of the Milwaukee Bucks. Not only was he the All-Star Game MVP, but yesterday in there, it was a tough win against a bad team like the Wizards. But Russell Westbrook put up a 40-point triple-double. Giannis also put up a triple-double. And if you looked at the rest of the Bucks, they struggled. Chris Middleton was 3 of 12. Drew Holiday was the next best scorer, but Brooke Lopez, I think, was the only other double figure scorer. Giannis carried them, absolutely carried them, and it worked. They got the win, and at the end of the day, that's the most important thing. So I wanted to give credit to Giannis because I don't expect the Bucks to make any real noise in the NBA playoffs this year, but I do believe that Giannis is starting to really understand the next steps he has to take to become an even better basketball player. And that's what I liked seeing out of him these past, during the All-Star break and now heading into the second half of the year.
My MVP is definitely not as touching as yours. It's John Jenkins. Do you know who John Jenkins is?
I do know who John Jenkins is.
I was introduced. Well, not introduced because I knew about this. There's this new upstart league called Fan Control Football, FCF for short. And I decided to watch it last night. They're in like week 3, but I guess they're in the playoffs. First of all, if you're bored on a Saturday night, definitely watch it. It's pure entertainment. So the big premise is they stream their games and the fans, like on an app, like vote for what play they run next. So they're at sort of the whim of fans, hence the name of the league. What I learned last night is there's 4 teams. Let me see if I can get these. There's the Zappers. There's the Wild Aces, there's the Beasts, which is Marshawn Lynch's team, and then there's one other. Do you know the other?
I don't.
Whatever it may be. Oh, the Glaciers, the Glacier Boys. That's what it was. So I was watching it, and I was informed to me that I see this coach. He's wearing leopard pants. He's got a Mark Davis haircut. He's strutting around, yelling at stuff. And I was informed that while he is the coach for what I thought was the Glacier Boys, he is also the coach for the 3 other teams in the league. So there's a singular coach running all 4 of them, which has to be some sort of conflict of interest. But this man definitely looked like was, first of all, strutting out in style, just loving life. And I got to give him MVP for managing 4 different teams all at once and also having no control, because I think he calls a total of 4 plays a game, because he gets like there's a power up that gives you the chance to call a play for your team when it actually matters. So you can call a timeout. So good on John Jenkins. God, what a time.
What a time indeed. Fan Control Football. Definitely check that stuff out. All right, moving on to some more superlatives here. The most disappointing athlete or team of the week. Who do you got?
I got to go back to what I was talking about before, just with Baylor. Going from undefeated to have – I mean, you obviously hit road bumps. We know losing, especially before March Madness, is okay. But they went from being this red-hot team, like they could arguably be the number one team in the league because Gonzaga's in a lesser conference, to, oh, okay. And I'm very concerned about them for March Madness. We talked about that plenty of times before. Also, maybe they're going to just exceed my expectations where – I'm so low on them and they're just going to blow me out of the water. So maybe I'm going to have to pick them to win. I don't know, Robbie. They're messing with my mind here.
Maybe they'll be your return of the king in a couple weeks. Who knows?
Yeah.
My most disappointing, is kind of on a similar note here. It's the Michigan Wolverines, namely them losing in the semifinal of the Big Ten tournament rather than at least making the Big Ten championship. 1-point loss is tough. You know, it was a good game regardless, but they got a little colder as the season went on, lost a couple games to good teams, mind you, but it's just a little worrisome. And then with the injury to Livers and your best player now being a freshman and then a fifth-year transfer, it's just some factors don't sound quite too great at this point. I'm still pretty confident in Michigan's ability. When they're a good team, I usually take them to win the whole thing. But they're just a little worrisome right now. So I'm a little disappointed that they didn't get to the Big Ten championship. Any bad boy nominees for this week?
You know, I do have one, but I don't know his name, so I'm going to call him out. I believe it was one of the SEC games, and I'm not sure if it was a Florida player or someone else in the other team. All I know is, and I can't name the name because I saw this clip probably 5 minutes before we started recording. All I saw was guys fighting for a rebound. They're fighting. I'm pretty sure it's a Florida player. But punches the other player. The guy kind of dodges it, sort of like pushes him. And then the Florida player does this like roundhouse elbow to the guy and like literally knocked him out cold, it seemed like. And it was vicious.
Can't be doing that.
No. And I'm going to say that's my bad boy of the week. Insert name here. You've been a bad boy.
No, don't be punching people on the court. Usually not going to do too much for you. My bad boy this week, not necessarily someone who did anything wrong, but somebody who maybe was wrong. So I was texting a buddy watching the end of the Illinois-Iowa game, and I was talking to him. I was actually mentioning that I think Iowa DeSumo was kind of like a poor man's John Morant to him, kind of having that discussion a little bit. And he was like, you know, I agree with you for the most part, but like he hasn't really done much today. He's been kind of quiet. Lo and behold, DeSumo then accounted for the next 12 points that the Illinois Fighting Illini scored. He scored 6 in a row, assisted and scored on the rest of that 12. Absolutely took over the end of the game. The energy level, the aggressiveness, and then you pair that with the natural-born talent. Iota Sumo is one bad boy. You absolutely got to watch out for him.
All right, I would like to retroactively correct my thing. I know the guy's name. Omar Payne, you've been a bad boy. And he was a Florida player. He elbowed John Fulkerson in the head. And John went down pretty quickly, quite cold. So, Omar, can't be doing that, bud. Hope you get a UFC contract or get out of my college basketball.
Yes, I'm going to agree with you there. Moment of the week this week for me is just today in general, that today is Selection Sunday. Last year, we were deprived of one of sports fans' most coveted favorite events, which is March Madness, as it was canceled right as the coronavirus kind of came over and got big here. Thankfully, we're in the point where we can safely have a tournament. I absolutely hope the players and coaches and all of them stay safe. That it has to be the most important thing still, of course, but at the end of the day, it is so nice having this back. To me, this is like the most exciting time of the year, sub maybe the NBA playoffs, so I could not be more ecstatic right now. That is my moment of the week.
I don't disagree with you there. I think to be a little bit different, I texted you this last Sunday and you just ignored me. The All-Star game. How much did you watch of it?
Absolutely not a second.
All right. I was watching it like toward the end after we were recording and I had some work to do. So I got that done, but I give my best moment to Nikola Jokic and nothing for what he did in game. Just the way he was playing. Like, he was doing all these like accentuated movements. He's like run up and down the court, like kind of flailing his arms around, like accentuating everything he did. And I just thought it was so funny. I know he meant to do that, but if he didn't, like, I do apologize, but it just looks so funny to me. It looked like he didn't know how to not try. So he's like, let me just over exaggerate everything. So he was making me laugh like nobody else. And I give my best moment to him for that reason.
The Joker, man. Always making people smile.
There you go.
We love it. One more award here. It's going to be the Return of the King. My Return of the King. I already mentioned him earlier, but again, another shout out to Caris LeVert. That very scary thing of having finding a cancerous mass. Thankfully, they caught it early, were able to correct it, surgically remove it. And now he is back playing basketball again. Michigan guy. He's dealt with injuries his whole career. I just like when he gets to be on the court and show everybody how good he can be. So my Return of the King this week, Caris LeVert of Indiana.
I do tend to agree with that. It's good to see this guy is back and healthy. My return of the king has got to be Cam Newton. And it's more because I'm shocked he got another contract. While Cam Newton's career, he definitely deserves it. It's good to see him literally return to the Patriots for twofold. One, I'm happy he has a starting job, at least tentatively. The other thing, though, is if he is a starting quarterback for the Patriots, that guarantees me another year of probably mediocrity. So I will feel better about myself as a salty Philadelphia fan. It gives me more time to wallow my own sorrow as the Eagles prepare for this next season. Oh, my goodness, this makes me sad. But good for Cam Newton. Patriots, good luck, but not really. So that's my return of the king.
We love that. You know, happy for Cam, and always here for Boston teams not doing too hot during the year. Boston Celtics and the Charlotte Hornets have the same record right now at 19-18, which is just a spectacular concept to think about. But that's what we got here for you guys this week. Again, we're that much closer to the bracket reveal, so let us know what you think. And again, we will probably be doing some kind of emergency episode to go through this bracket, give you guys the real rundown, who we think are the locks, the guys to teams to avoid, all that good stuff. But for now, I hope you have a fantastic week and enjoy the rest of the episode. And of course, we'll be back next week with a couple March Madness games to report on. Oh man, again, just a fantastic time of the year for sports.
Yeah, I think we're going to have the first round done by the time we record. Maybe even part of the second.
Yeah, depending on what, yeah.
Yeah, we'll have to see what goes on, what madness happens. But take care, guys. We'll definitely have something in the near future. Peace.
Oh, and don't worry. The orange juice video is coming to Twitter. I promise you, we have not forgotten about it. It is sitting in my fridge right now. Just gonna brainstorm ways to record this most effectively and hilariously for you guys to enjoy. So, again, big things coming. Have a fantastic week.